Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women. Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Health insurance made easy through It's for Women.
Good day to you all. It's Oliver on the air till 10. It is the 4th of July and more importantly, it's Friday. Hooray! What doings are you doing today? The WhatsApp is open for business. You know the way in by now. It's 087 032 32 32, and the email is there as well. It's very busy lately. oliver@rte.ie. Yeah, do you know the way Americans generally, don't they say the date with the month first, like it's December 20th, because they put the date in digits, you know, like as in the month first and the date, 9-11, September 11th. But for their Independence Day, it's the 4th of July, is what they always say. So they say it like we would over here. Very confusing, complicated people, very through other. But it's a big, beautiful country, and happy Independence Day to any of the Yanks listening. You are very welcome, Falcha, for sure. What is happening here for the next hour? Well, we are going to be meeting, well, we've been talking to a lot of Irish people, youngsters who are abroad. I'd say the housing crisis sent many people away, but they flourish when they get there. It's not the only reason, but they do leave and few are hurrying back. Unrelated, Rachel Lally is a teacher turned professional boxer. She travelled from Mayo to the Middle East and she's training and working her way up the world rankings there. So it's another brilliant story about the Irish in sport. We're going to find out why they call Rachel Lally the Bullet from Belmullet. That's a good nickname, isn't it? In boxing, nicknames are kind of essential, it seems. They don't do it in golf for some reason. I don't know why. Rory McIlroy, the Hollywood hacker. Anybody? No? Okay. And our visiting critic, because it is Friday, is a food and travel content creator. She's really good. Look up Aideen Fitzmaurice on Instagram, spelled the Irish way, E-F-O-D-A, A-D-A-O-I-N, Fitzmaurice, and she's very good. She has been trying her hand at crochet, so she's got the knitting needles out, and she went to a class, and so she put down the phone and the tech and calmed down for a day because she's travelling and zipping all around the country, and she's very good at reviewing parts of Ireland, and she gets millions of views from people abroad looking for tips, the best place to visit in Ireland. We'll ask her. Sure, it's July. We'll be thinking of where we're going for the rest of the summer as well. 51551, that is the text message. Big weekend in Croke Park. It's a total sellout for complete and total hurling. Cork versus Dublin, Kilkenny versus Tipperary. So you'll have Cork again Dublin at 5 o'clock tomorrow night on Saturday. Sunday is Kilkenny Tip. That's what's happening. Dublin, the success story, outstanding story really of the season. Although they had a middling Leinster campaign, they beat Offaly, Wexford, Antrim, and then lost to Kilkenny and Galway in that group system they have, but are hoping to unseat the Rebels, who are really desperately looking for the first All-Ireland win since 2005. But historically, you have to go back to 1927 to find Dublin's last championship triumph over Cork, which was in the All-Ireland final in nearly 100 years ago. Kilkenny Tip, they haven't met in the championships since 2019. It was quite recent, but that's a long time for the two superpowers in hurling. Tip won that one, and that's what's happening. Donal Cusack on Morning Ireland, he's a hurling nation with his predictions. He is tipping his own native Cork to win, but is admitting that hurling needs Dublin to emerge. I think it'll be very good. And surprisingly, he says Tip will beat Kilkenny. He's going against many of the other pundits. Joe Canning was here telling us, was that 2 weeks ago when Joe was in with us, that the Cats would win the Lee McCarthy Cup this year. So that's what we're going to see. We'll see now what'll happen. What's going on? It's very exciting. Sell out. Hon the Rebels. Did I mention my mother's from East Cork? It's too late now. And yeah, as you heard in Morning Ireland, the Oasis thing is finally happening. God, will it ever end. Gigs, they start in Cardiff, then they go to Manchester. There are two nights at Croke Park on the 16th and 17th of August. It's their first gig together in 16 years. The Gallagher brothers, not mentioning them that again. This is far more interesting. Pollen, are you hearing a lot of people talking about sudden onset of hay fever? People who have had hay fever all their life, it's really bad. The levels of pollen are so high, even those with no allergy to pollen are affected. This is Europe-wide. Pollen levels are so, so high, according to the Copernicus Atmosphere Monitoring Service, which is a lovely name they gave to the EU Weather Agency. They've reported a rise in grass and olive pollen release and the transport around Europe. This is actually just olives on the move. So we've been buying a lot of olives in the last 20 years, which is why instances of hay fever are reportedly going higher all the time. And even in Western Finland, unheard of to have pollen there. This is to do with birch pollen in the northeastern, northwestern, western parts of Europe, which is really us, although we don't have many trees here in Ireland anymore. Extreme daily of means of birch pollen has led to symptoms, even among individuals who have never had an allergy to pollen before. The usual symptoms of hay fever: sneezing, itchy eyes, runny nose and a headache are caused by the body producing allergic antibodies when it comes into contact with pollen. So that's what's going on. In Britain, they say the driest start to a spring there since 1956 has led to an explosion in symptoms, with plants and trees flowering earlier, lengthening the pollen season. It doesn't say here whether that is happening here too, but anecdotally, certainly, I know a lot of people sniffling, and I sneezed five times myself on a walk this morning. So we're all suffering this blighted thing. The Irish Times, by the way, it looks like the presidential election might be heating up at last. Their headline, Fine Gael presidential hopeful. Murray McGuinness got €800,000 in EU expenses for the costs of office that she owns. And it's beautifully described as a potential point of discomfort for the woman who is the favourite at the moment to win the race for the Oireachtas, which is happening in the autumn. And in Fine Gael circles, they're starting to wonder about this. So what is this 800,000 figure? In 16 years, it's spread across a long time. She received more than €800,000 in unvouched general allowance payments to cover office rent and management costs and expenses for phones, computers and other political representation costs. Now, the European Parliament says a general allowance, it's not paid automatically. MEPs must request payment. Members are free to request all or part of the amount of the allowance and or to reimburse the amounts that they didn't use. So this was her constituency office, mostly the money was for. And it was there's a spokesperson for Murray McGuinness, says the allowance was paid monthly into a separate account, which she opened back in 2004 at the start of her mandate. It was expended in accordance with the rules governing such payments. None of the allowance was used other than for servicing the constituency over the 16 years she served as an MEP. No monies were paid to the MEP or her husband for the use of the building. And of course, all of this is within the rules set by the European Parliament. But the potential point of discomfort could be a potential summer of discomfort for many of the candidates, wondering should they go, should they not. But the firing pistols, or maybe the media is just desperately trying to start the firing pistol on a thing we thought would be up and running by now. Now, this movie was released 40 years ago. Have you got it yet? Back to the Future, released 40 years ago in the United States. Very much of its time and also completely timeless, and it's a time-hopping film. It was a box office summer smash in 1985. The time travel movie, no film has beaten it since, and it is a perfect film. There isn't a single scene out of place, there isn't a blip. You can watch it endlessly, and many people do. It's about basically the joy of it is it's a kid who goes back in time to his dad's high school, cue comedy and hijinks, and his mum in the old time zone gets the hots for her own son. They would not make this film today. But all of the fun and the comedy just diffuses any potential ickiness, which is cast aside. Well, I don't want to spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen it. The actor who played the mum, Lorraine, by the way, says there's a better reason that it wouldn't be made now. She said if you made Back to the Future in 2025 and they went back 30 years, 1995, nothing would be much different. The phones would be a little bit different, but it wouldn't be, she says, like the very strange difference between the 1980s and the middle of the 1950s and how extraordinarily different the world was. So when we dip into a little bit of it, why not? This is the first time travel scene. Marty McFly and Doc Brown, they're in the car park, and Doc has just put his own dog Einstein into the car, and it goes in this incredible blaze of flames, and Marty McFly is astounded.
Jesus Christ, Doc, you disintegrated Einstein.
Calm down, Marty, I didn't disintegrate anything. The molecular structure of both Einstein and the car are completely intact.
Where the hell are they?
The appropriate question is, when the hell are they? You see, Einstein has just become the world's first time traveler. I sent him into the future. 1 minute into the future, to be exact. And precisely 1:21 a.m. in 0 seconds, we shall catch up with him at the time machine.
Wait a minute, Doc. Are you telling me that you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
The way I see it, if you're going to build a time machine into a car, why not do it with some style?
Love it. Great Scott. And the DeLoreans, by the way, they still look cool. They were all made in Dunmurry outside of Belfast. And the film actually has quite a lot of lore attached. They sacked the original Marty McFly actor, Eric Stoltz. Imagine that. He was cast in the lead role, but he apparently played it too serious. And he got fired while they were making the movie, which is really cruel. And then Spielberg, who was the producer, and Robert Zemeckis, who got the movie because he had made a great success of Romancing the Stone with Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner. They got the Canadian guy who they wanted all along, Michael J. Fox from the sitcom Family Ties, and they had to beg the studio to release him from there. And then he partnered, of course, with Christopher Lloyd, you've heard, as Doc Brown, and it was just magic and fun and brilliant. You wouldn't have a kid like that either, would you, matched up with someone who was much older in a kind of comedy partnership? And Lee Thompson was the name of the actor who played Lorraine, and her background was a ballet dancer, and so that gave her the ability of the movement, she says, and she's talking about it 40 years later, the perfect physicality movement required to play both versions of Lorraine, one young and airy in the 1950s and the other middle-aged and beaten down by life, she describes it, in 1985. And Michael J. Fox was still working in the sitcom while making the movie, and it was really sleep deprived, and that made him kind of frazzled, and he brought all of that kind of manic energy and the iconic timing, and he ad-libbed quite a few of the excitable lines. I was also reading this morning in The Guardian that the bully and villain Biff, who bullies Marty McFly's dad, was based on Donald Trump. It was based entirely on him. And in the second film, which is set in 2015, Biff has become a successful businessman with a string of casinos. I did not spot that at the time, so now I know. And it is 1985. Ronald Reagan was a fan. He was the president at the time, and he quoted the film in the State of the Union address a few months later in 1986, where he said, "Where we're going, we don't need roads." Maybe where Mr. Trump is leading us all, we won't need roads either. Or sky, or cars, or anything good. Now, speaking of the future, this is the scary bit of the future. Wall Street Journal this morning reporting the chief executives of the big American companies are saying the quiet part out loud. Artificial intelligence is going to wipe out many jobs. So for a very long time, they've been dodging the question of whether AI takes jobs. Now they're giving predictions out loud. The Ford Motor chief executive, one of the biggest companies in the world, Jim Farley, says AI is going to replace literally half of all white collar workers in the US. It'll leave a lot of the white collar people behind. He means office based rather than physical labour, is the blue collar. So people in offices, accountants, lawyers, admin, management, all of those people. JP Morgan Chase, the CEO of the bank's huge consumer and community business, told investors that she could see its operations headcount falling by 10% in the coming years. That's that awful euphemism they use for human beings who work at a company, the headcount, 10% cut there. Amazon has already been boasting that their overall corporate workforce, this is the managers, will be smaller in the coming years thanks to the AI investments they're doing. Anthropic CEO says that half of all entry-level jobs will disappear in between 1 to 5 years, so very soon, and that will result in US unemployment of between 10 to 20%. That is twice the size of the rate of unemployment, by the way, in America after the 2008 banking crash. It was 10%, so 20% will be double. Anthropic is a company that specialises on AI safety, believe it or not. Shopify, which is a huge online shopping company, you probably don't even know half the time you're using it, they told workers that the company won't make any new hires now unless the managers can prove that AI isn't capable of doing the job of the person they're thinking of hiring. It's extraordinary. And various other CEOs are saying it's going to destroy way more jobs than the average person thinks. So there you go. That's what's coming. Now, on the other side of that, the chief operating officer of OpenAI, one of the biggest artificial intelligence companies at the moment, most valuable, says the fears are overblown. He told the podcast, Brad Lightcap, Is that a real person? Brad, anyway, told this podcast, he says he doesn't believe the impact to entry-level workers will be as swift and sweeping as people are predicting. We've yet to see any evidence that people are kind of wholesale replacing entry-level jobs. So do you believe the guy who's... company's making all the money from the AI. I'm not so sure. Speaking of the movies, by the way, the Hollywood actor Michael Madsen, he died very suddenly. He was only 67 years of age, cardiac arrest, best known for being in almost every Quentin Tarantino film, but especially the villain in Reservoir Dogs, 1992, Kill Bill, Volume 2 especially. He's only referenced in the first film, The Hateful Eight, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Always plays wisecracking, tough guys, and was in Thelma and Louise as well, and also Donnie Brasco. So he's a huge heritage behind him. And his sister has been leading the tribute. She said, "My brother Michael has left the stage. He was thunder and velvet. Mischief wrapped in tenderness, a poet disguised as an outlaw, a father, a son, a brother etched in contradiction, tempered by love that left its mark. He married three times, had seven children." What a lovely kind of description. Thunder and velvet. This was the big tune in Reservoir Dogs all those years ago. 51551 is the text. It's Friday, everybody. Good morning.